这样了，谢谢。Okay, so in quantum mechanics, one of the results of one of the interpretations of quantum mechanics is that a particular state, as a kind of technical term, meaning in quantum mechanics, but a particular state of a system only arises once an observation has taken place. Yeah. And is there a parallel between that and God observing us and so keeping us in being? You know, honestly, I don't know. I'm not keen to speculate on that. There may be, but there's so much to think about in that question. I'm sorry, Caroline. You should come up here and talk. So I think, just theologically, and this isn't where we're going today, but just for your thinking, the main line of inquiry will be the thought that we are analogous to God. In biblical terms, we are made in God's image. So when God has made us like him, and so we should expect our interactions with the world to be a little bit like God's interactions with the world. You see this in Genesis, God names creatures. And then God says to Adam, okay, you give all the creatures their names. So there's all these fascinating, subtle ways in which we like God, we're relational, we take dominion and so on. And it may be that that's another much more subtle reflection of being in the image of God. Maybe that's where I pursue it theologically.
That's right.
Okay, well, I guess right then.
It's not an argument or evidence that is
intriguing. And then you pursue the thought. Yeah, very much so. Thank you. Yeah.
Now, does anyone who hasn't said or asked anything?
Gentleman at the back, right?
Yes.
Hello.
The gentleman who said that people doing what they think is right in their own eyes.
Yeah.
That's fine. Your claim earlier that all one can do is kind of have a private opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to say something is right or wrong, you've got to appeal to a higher authority.
Yes.
And in both cases, I don't actually agree.
Mm-hmm.
From my point of view, I don't sit in the dark asking science to explain reality to me or asking Christianity to explain it to me.
Mm.
I go to the school. And I find out from the source myself how things are. And I claim that I know, from the things are,
mm-hmm.
I know how life comes about, how existence comes about. And this puts me in a very strange situation because how can I possibly make a claim like that? So I'm saying that all of those people who do know, say, I don't believe in God,
mm-hmm.
I know God. I spend all of my time in contact with God, mm-hmm. the world of the soul, I know. And for all of those people who say that, and say it very strongly and personally, who say, well, science, you can make all the theories you like, but I know, mm-hmm. I'm just going to make that point.
Thank you. Great.
Gentlemen, I just wanted to take the overall topic of the conversation,
whether
this is really an opposition between science and religion head to head.
Yeah, yeah.
So whether it's simply an asynchronous conversation, because as Christians we're interested in what science has to say as well as as well as religion. But most of the science, Peter Atkins, for example, is saying that all the why questions are silly questions.
Right.
And Dawkins is always treating people with contempt to talk about it. It's as though there's something in religion that they don't need, and therefore they're just disposed to ignore it completely. It doesn't tell me anything. Dawkins, again, is always saying that God doesn't explain anything to me. If you put God at the end of this,
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're onto something. I'm nervous. You've probably spotted that once or twice about picking on Richard Dawkins, because what I've noticed is that quite a lot of atheists are embarrassed by him now. He's regarded, since he wrote The God's Illusion, he's become a bit of a spot. It's such a bad book. I mean, I don't want to be rude, but it's dismal. And lots of atheists still want to be atheists, but they've got better arguments than that. But because he's so influential, I think, yeah, it is right to quote him and to try and engage with him. But to return to the point you made at the beginning of what you said, yeah, the overall field in which you're working, you want to say that all truth is true and science gives you access to a good deal of it. Great. But let's not pretend that science gives you access to all of it, or that anything that's outside the realm of science is not really worth bothering with. Actually, we can be men and women of integrity and benefit from the best of what science has achieved, and at the same time say there is more to life and there are things that science can't explain. And why should that be so controversial? It's become controversial, I think, in the last 150 years, 200 years or so. And well, there's a bunch of historical reasons for that. But it shouldn't be controversial. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? If you all have another go.
Well, there's so many questions, but one of the problems I've came to is that maybe at some point in time, maybe hundreds or even thousands of years down the road, if science can't, because at the moment we can't, those who have produced or created life from scratch, the best we've done are amino acids.
Mm.
And that's another thing that's a little bit odd. We think that if life started by, you know, just a few chance chemical reactions, you think by now someone would have got the hang of that. Well, it should be going on all of the time. It's a business, and we can't do it. So, in a roundabout way, that's an argument against evolution. Yeah. But just for argument's sake, if somebody does, in the future, actually manage to create life,
yeah,
what impact do you think that will then have on religion?
That's a really good question. I'd like that. If somebody managed to, let's suppose somebody managed to create just from, you know, the stuff you can buy at Boots, they managed to create a simple bacteria. Man, that'd be awesome. I mean, now imagine that were possible. What that would prove is that by the input of a colossal amount of intelligence, a huge amount of energy, and hundreds of years of accumulated wisdom, you can produce something really, really simple. Right. It would not prove that that same thing can arise, bang, out of nowhere. See what I mean? Can you see the difference? It's a little bit like the gentleman just sitting in front of you to the right. You know, what does it prove that you can artificially collect for better milking cows or whatever? What it proves is that by input of wisdom and intelligence, you can slightly tweak a species. We knew that. Yeah. That would be the status of that achievement. People might feel threatened by it, and you see headlines in the newspaper, these guys are playing God. Well, they're playing God really badly.
Because the Christian claim is that God made the universe out of nothing.
Right, exactly. And the atheist claim is that the universe arose without the input of intelligence. That's the crucial thing. And if somebody manages to use intelligence to produce something that's living like that, that wouldn't prove the atheist claim at all. In fact, it would show how far reality is from the atheist claim. Come back to me. I suspect you're 80% happy, but not 100%.
No, yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
Okay.
I think the non-religious people that we seize upon as well, they can't be, but because we can do it, we can't do it.
Sure.
We have the danger of trying to link religion too closely with science. You know, it's all one as I see it.
Yeah, okay.
I see now, as religion has got, seeing mainly with the soul, like the oil shed.
Okay.
Not necessarily about explaining the material around the realm.
Okay, yeah, I think maybe you're onto something. I mean, it's true. I mean, just we are getting off topic now, but give me 10 seconds on it. It's true that the Bible is concerned about our souls, yeah, and our eternal destiny, and you know, None of the questions that we're doing here to stop you going to church, you know. That's really. But I think in the Bible says that Jesus is Lord, and that in Scripture is an expansive term denoting dominion and authority over all things, and therefore it's right to try and pursue these other questions in the right proportion, in the right context.
Did I see your hand earlier, or was it
Vivian's
hand
again?
The Higgs boson thing, I'm not sure beyond... Particle physics wasn't my bag. But, and if I say what I do know, most people will go, yeah, we knew that. As I understand it, Higgs boson is a particle which is predicted, and has been predicted for some time, by theoreticians, but has never been observed. And now it's been observed, am I right? In accordance with an experiment, which is... That's really cool science. I'm not sure what's at stake beyond that. It may be that people call it the God particle, I think the reason why it's seen as that significant is because there is a huge amount of matter evidently in the universe which can't be seen, and one of the postulates is that the existence of the Higgs boson might explain that. I don't want to go beyond my competence in that. Yeah.
Matter can be formed
in a connection. Right, okay. Yeah. I mean, if we were living a few hundred years ago, we'd be asking the same question about Mercury's orbit. And, not a few hundred years, yeah, a couple of hundred years ago. We'd be asking the same question about Mercury's orbit and the fact that the Newtonian gravitational theory, doesn't accurately predict Mercury's orbit. And we'd be predicting that there ought to be a theory that will tweak the gravitational force at really high gravitational fields. So, and you'd expect to be that somebody would be able to formalise that at some later stage. It's kind of there you've got the observation first, and then the theory comes along second. Here you've got the theory first, and then the observation second. Science often does that, and it's not a threat to science, it's not a threat to theology, it's a particularly prominent step forward being taken in what I think is a journey we're just beginning to understand the universe we inhabit. One of the things that I noticed was always characteristic of the best scientists that I worked with, and I worked with one of these pretty eminent people, who professors and so on, was that they were always the first to say, oh, I don't know much about that, you have to ask somebody else. You think, you sort of do know about this. But they knew how much more there was that they didn't know. And that, we're back to the thing about humility again, about acknowledging that we are just at the beginning. And there's nothing sacrosanct or ultimate about the current state of our knowledge. And in 100 years' time, we'll think how primitive we all were.
See, if we wanted to think a bit more about this, what would be the lesson people to read or books or places to...
We were talking about a book by John Lennox. John Lennox is an Oxford mathematician. You got it there, God's Undertaker. That is, I've read, before God's Undertaker was written, I've read about a dozen or more books at that kind of semi-popular level about science and the Christian faith. And that says everything that all those books say, better, and a whole bunch more stuff besides. You don't need any other books at the kind of the semi-popular level about science and Christianity. Once you've read that, it's superb, really. So that's God's Undertaker by John Lennox. And mercifully, he is, on publication of that book, he has quickly been recognised as a leading authority on this subject, and so he's debated, and you can get YouTube debates. If you want fun, I'm picking on him again. There's a debate between him and Richard Dawkins. I think Richard Dawkins underprepared for that debate because he was humiliated. I can only think he thought he was dealing with an idiot and therefore didn't need to prepare. And he discovered that he'd met a man who was just prepared and extremely well thought through. So John Lennox's book is superb. The YouTube debate, you can see that. What you shouldn't do, please don't Google science and Christianity. I teach a little theology course at the church I work at in London, and I tell my students, you will never learn decent theology on the internet. But what you get is whoever's managed to become most prominent, it might not be the leading authorities, and you sometimes get some really wacky stuff. So John Lennox is really good. Andrew Satch, an old friend of mine, is works at St. Helens. He's given one or two good talks on this subject. St. Helens Bishopsgate in central London. I think you might have mentioned that on your blog, did you?
Yeah,
that's good. Caroline,
sorry.
Yeah, Caroline.
Has there been anything interesting in the edge of science, the way it works? You talk about science by definition controlling things and looking for capability. But as I understand, a very good a line of inquiry which is interested in considering unrepeatability as something interesting, and particularly in things like the placebo effect, and the way the belief operates in affecting outcomes. But actually, science is questioning itself about the definition of, you know, randomized, controlled, repeatable trials. Actually, maybe you should be looking at something that's a broad definition of that. Change the polarity that apparently exists, that actually there isn't that polarity, it's because of the wrong definition of knowledge.
What you said sparks a couple of thoughts. The first is exactly what you mentioned, the placebo effect. And the curious relationship between states of mind and physical health. And this emerges in all kinds of strange ways, from trials where the placebo effect seems to be statistically significant, to psychiatric treatments for physical ailments. I know people who were ill for years with chronic fatigue, and I know three people personally who were bedridden for months or years. One guy for almost a decade with chronic fatigue, and he had a psychiatric treatment called the lightning treatment. I think it's called the lightning treatment. I'm not advertising it, I'm just saying it's a psychiatric treatment and it cured him. What is going on? I think what's going on is we are more complicated than a bag of juice. That's what's going on. Yeah, and you know, everyone knows, you know, where is the suicide rate highest and when? It's in Arctic countries when it's their winter, because the sun isn't around so much, so you don't get so much of those hormones, and that changes your mental and your physical well-being and so on. It produces suicidal tendencies in northern Sweden, for example. Now, that's the first thing. So the psychosomatic effects are more significant than I think contemporary medicine sometimes gives them credit for. Secondly, on the issue of predictability, of course, chaos theory, or more accurately, sensitive dependence on initial conditions. One of the ways in which this was first highlighted was with I can't remember the technical name for it, but you imagine a pendulum, say this high, and it can swing backwards and forwards and left and right. So it can swing all like this all over the place. And on the end of the pendulum is a very strong magnet with its south pole pointing downwards. And then underneath you've got two north poles here and here. And you start the pendulum swinging, and it goes swing, 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 round, round, all over the place in a really random pattern. And then finally its energy dissipates because of air resistance, and it settles on one of the poles. And then you start it again from the same place. You're trying to start it from the same place. And it starts swinging in the same direction, and then very quickly goes off on a completely different path. There is a very sensitive dependence on a tiny, tiny change in the initial conditions. So sensitive that the behaviour of the device is chaotic. That is to say, technically it becomes unpredictable very quickly. In more conventional terms, the butterfly effect. Heard that? Heard the phrase? So, how sensitive do you think world climate is to small perturbations, small variations? If a butterfly flaps its wings in Siberia, would that change the weather 3 weeks later in Nebraska? Probably. Ask anybody who works in the Met Office. I know a couple of people. See, see, so there are physical systems governed by actually fairly simple physical laws, which are chaotic, unpredictable. In fact, even, I think this is right, three bodies orbiting each other in under gravity. I'm not sure whether that's chaotic or whether it's just, you can't, I think it's not chaotic, but you can't solve the equation for it. It's the behaviour of the system is so complicated that it can't be solved analytically. I think that's right. In other words, the world we live in is absolutely staggeringly weird and difficult to understand. So away with this hubris and arrogance of saying that science has got there or science will get there. It's not true.
I qualify to let people make their statement at 9, which we're very near at. So, do you have a final sort of 45 seconds of here's what I'd like to leave you with, and then we'll make it in? I haven't warned people, so no pressure.
Well, look, I mean, I've had a privilege of talking about this stuff in a few places, and it's been a real privilege to be here tonight, and I don't think I've been in a place where there has been such a thoughtful level of engagement. I mean, I'm not trying to flatter you. I'm grateful for that.
Awesome.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've got. I suppose here's what I would encourage you to do. I'd encourage you to keep pursuing this question from both sides. There's stuff about science you don't know. No surprise there. And there's stuff about the Christian faith that you don't know, and exploring both of them will be wonderful for you. I know Mark pretends not to know all the answers to those difficult questions you ask him. He does. And I encourage you to, wherever you are in your faith or uncertainty or your confidence in your faith, and wherever you are in your views of science, to keep exploring both of those things. Maybe step up the intensity of your explorations. And if you never really read the Bible for yourself, get yourself a Bible reading plan. If you've never really read about science and Christianity, grab that book by Lennox and read both. And try and push yourself and keep going, because I'm struck by the level of engagement here already. And I think for everyone, just to keep thinking, keep moving on as thoughtful people thinking about the world, scientists and as Christians.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. It's been a fascinating evening. Let this spread out. Thank you very much indeed for coming. You're welcome to stick around and discuss further with Steve if you'd like to. We hope also to put the audio of the talk and the handout up on the Warburton Church website. So if you want to listen again or point somewhere else towards that, hopefully that will appear there soon. Thank you very much.